The Pat Miller Program, from the Windows, Doors, and More Studio. Visit their showroom for your kitchen and bath inspirations on WoWo, 1190 AM, 107.5 FM. Depend on it.
Good afternoon, everybody. On this Monday, welcome back to the 5 o'clock portion of the Pat Miller Program.
This is WoWo Breaking News, powered by Masters Heating and Cooling.
And it is a bit of breaking news, as there seems to be a bit of disruption, which maybe we could have seen coming, between Republicans on Capitol Hill. I want to let you know I'm making efforts to reach people in the office of Liz Cheney for her to give her side of a dialogue that she's having with our 3rd District Congressman, Jim Banks. Jim, good afternoon to you, sir. Welcome to the program. Jim, are you there?
I am. Good to be with you, Pat.
There we go. Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, my understanding is you're in Pennsylvania right now, and you're driving back to D.C. Do I have that correct?
I got the dog in the back seat. I got my youngest daughter next to me, and we're closing in on Washington, D.C. as we head back to the Beltway to go back to work a couple of days this week. You know, Pat, I'm actually going to the border tomorrow with a handful of my colleagues. For a couple of days this week, too. So we've got a busy week ahead of us.
Wow, you really do. And we'll be looking forward to hearing from you late in the week on how that goes when you're down at the border. But just now, the last time I spoke with you, I think on air, or the time before last, you had Kevin McCarthy on with you. You had what has now been deemed the memo that you, as the head of the Republican Study Committee, had written to House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy on what you viewed was what Republicans should do if they have a great, strong shot of retaking the House. Is that the reason and the emphasis behind why you created the memo you did?
Yeah, I thought the memo was important to write. I gave it to Kevin McCarthy last week when he was in Fort Wayne. And, you know, as you put it, Pat, I mean, Donald Trump gave the Republican Party a gift in his appeal to the working class, making the Republican Party the party of the working class more so than at any point since Reagan and even before. And it's important, I believe, that we maintain that permanently. And there are some things that we can do as Republicans to do that. I gave some recommendations to Republican leadership on not just an agenda, which is really the Trump agenda that appeals to working class voters, but also some advice on what we can do politically to go back to our districts and listen and learn more from working-class, blue-collar voters in our district who sometimes vote with us like they did when President Trump was on the ballot. Sometimes they vote Democrat. They're non-traditional Republican voters at large, but there are ways that we can permanently bring them into our camp. The coalitional transformation, though, is one that we're now – the Democrat Party is the party of corporate America, and putting the corporate America interest over the interest of the working class.
Yeah, the big dollar guys.
Should never do again.
Yeah, the big dollar guys. So let me ask you this. When we talked about this memo, made all the sense in the world to me. I'm going to go back and pick up on one of the quotes that you said to me when we were together last week. You said, there is an embittered and loud minority in the GOP that finds our new coalition, in other words, our new chance to walk and talk and hold hands and play along with the working class of America, they find that distasteful, but President Trump's gift didn't come with a receipt. Well, when you talk about this embittered part of the GOP, is that where you now think that you place, at least in your understanding, Liz Cheney?
Well, I didn't list her by name in the memo, and I certainly didn't expect her to backlash against the memo because I don't know what in the memo there is to disagree with. The fact of the matter is that more than ever before, the public polling shows that more working class voters self-identify themselves as Republican today than what they did before Donald Trump was the leader of our party. But, Pat, there are some in our party who dislike Donald Trump so much they want to erase him from the Republican Party. They say he has no role in the future of the Republican Party, and they would have rather him not have been a part of the Republican Party to begin with. And if you're going to erase Donald Trump from the Republican Party, then you're going to put us in a situation, I believe, that will inevitably lead to the destruction of the Republican Party and will ensure that we don't win the majority in 2022 and win the White House back in 2024. That's why I wrote the memo. I didn't know what kind of reaction I would get. I mean, at the end of the day, it's political advice to Republican leadership on coming from a member who happens to represent a working class, a blue collar district, the son of a factory worker and a nursing home cook who understands that appeal that Donald Trump had with those voters is something that we want to keep permanently. And I'm not sure at this point because of her reaction, Pat. I mean, to be honest, between you and I don't. Her reaction is one that leads me to believe that she probably didn't really read the memo because it doesn't really make sense in her reaction. But if she really does believe that, then I have to wonder if she would rather the Republican Party be the big business corporate America party. I know as for me, I want the Republican Party to be one that shaped in Donald Trump's in his way of appealing to working class voters and be that way for the rest of my life.
Well, let me ask you this, Congressman. Again, we're talking to Congressman Jim Banks, and on very short notice, on a text message to his chief of staff and then between me and the congressman, he's agreed to this interview as he's driving back to D.C. So, first of all, Congressman, we appreciate that. But I read things that you had said in your vision for what Republicans can do, where we would be better off to embrace working class, at least the working class coalition that Donald Trump put together. I don't necessarily have anything against the two gentlemen that she has referenced, but she thinks we're better off if we go back and fully embrace the traditional establishment positions of John Boehner and Paul Ryan. They both did some good things as Speaker. They're not a McCarthy. They're not of that mold. Is this really a drawing of battle lines? And is it good for you? And I'll just tell you, I think it is good for you to come out and to have this fight now, so that when people go in to vote for congressional offices in 2022, Congressman, we need to have a very good, clear idea for whom it is we're voting.
Yeah, Pat, I think, as I said, Donald Trump brought voters into our camp that didn't vote Republican before him. They didn't vote for McCain. They didn't vote for Mitt Romney. They might not have even voted for Bush Cheney in the 2000s. And I'm talking about working class voters. By the way, in the memo, I make this case that who is the working class? The working class is white, black, Latino, Asian,
right,
on and on. And that's why Donald Trump did so much better with all sectors of those voters than what Republicans did before, because of an agenda that put American workers first, recognizing that immigration policy for foreign workers to come and take jobs from Americans is not appealing to the working class, recognizing that if we turn a blind eye to big tech, Silicon Valley, Wall Street, and they're sending jobs to China, that we're not putting the working class in America first. And Donald Trump understood that better than any politician in my lifetime. And because of that, he had an appeal with these voters that Republicans didn't have before. So that's why in the memo I talk about this gift that Donald Trump gave us, and it's a gift wrapped right in front of our eyes. Are we going to open it up and maintain it and permanently keep it, or are we going to let Democrats figure it out and take it back away from us again? And that's why I felt the urgency of writing the memo and why I gave it to Kevin McCarthy last week.
Well, and there is nothing intrinsically involved in the memo that said, oh, and by the way, Donald Trump does have to be the guy out front carrying the banner. I think you and I both figure that would be fine with us if that happened. But if it doesn't, the Donald Trump agenda can live on. You know, if it's another good, strong conservative Republican out front, you know, and you and I could sit here and name probably 6 to 8 of them as president and vice presidential considerations. I would be forced of my own conscience to put you in that number somewhere. But in looking at that, what about that memo would cause her to say it was neo-Marxist? It's like she was just reaching back in her grab bag to pull out a very incendiary term so that people will look at you now and go, oh, he's that guy that wrote that neo-Marxist stuff. Or where did she get that?
Yeah, I don't get it. That part of it doesn't make sense. But because I praised Donald Trump and talked about the virtues of the agenda that was the Trump agenda for 4 years in this country, which was a good agenda with a very positive outcome for America. That we're seeing the opposite of with the Biden agenda, because I praise the Trump agenda and what President Trump did for the Republican Party. I think that you're going to get backlash from those who want to erase Donald Trump from the Republican Party. But you said something that's really important, Pat, and I just want to emphasize it again. The agenda, the Trump agenda, is a lot more important to me than Trump the man. I mean, Trump the man, as president, as a candidate, he was a force that made the agenda possible in a way that I believe few others in history or at this moment in history could have made it possible. And that's why I praise him for it. But it's about the agenda. It's about an agenda that puts American workers' interests ahead of those abroad, an agenda that puts the future of America and the American dream first for those who are seeking to achieve it. And that's an agenda that I'm going to continue to fight for, I promise you, for the rest of my time in public life.
Well, as you're driving back, it'll be nice and dark by the time you get back to Washington, D.C., and then you're going to be up and heading out to the border tomorrow, correct?
That's right. Early tomorrow morning, head to Texas and spend a couple of days at the border, and I look forward to checking in with you when I do.
Yeah. What is it that you think you're going to see? I mean, you know a lot of what's going on down there, but does it just help everything to just come crystal clear to you? I mean, we can sit here and I can read newsprint and I can tell everybody what the Biden administration and what their agenda is doing down on the border, but to actually walk in and to see hundreds of young people crammed into fenced areas that were made for 1/15th, 1/20th of the number of people that are in there, it's got to be really amazing to see it.
Well, and it's going to be a stark difference from what I saw in August when I went to the border just 7 or 8 months ago.
Right.
So it's going to be a lot different. I was just there back in August, and now it's a whole different situation because this Biden administration has reversed the policies that worked in the Trump administration. So the number of unaccompanied minors coming over the border today is 5 times greater than what it was at the height of those numbers at the highest periods during the Trump administration. It's because of these weak policies of President Biden and what his team has put together. So unfortunately, the Biden administration has put a complete gag order on media going down to the border and showing footage or photos of what's going on there. So the only way to show it is for members of Congress to go down there as members of the federal legislature with the oversight capacity that we have and take our iPhones and take pictures and show the American people the truth.
Yeah. What's amazing about that gag order on the media, by the way, didn't mean to jump on you there, but if Donald Trump had asked them, hey, guys, don't do any reporting or any video for a while because we're dealing with a very delicate situation, they would have jumped all over him on that, and they would have kicked that order aside as fast as they could. But because Biden's asked for it, I mean, they're just going on as like little trolls.
So they would have impeached Donald Trump for something like that, and the media would have called for it.
Yeah, amazing. Absolutely amazing. Well, listen, thank you very much for making time today. My negotiations with you today to have you on. The next time you and the family are back in town, which daughter is it that's with you there in the car?
I've got my youngest, Annie, and she's got her nose buried in a book, and the dog is in the back seat.
Well, when you and the family are back in town, the dog gets the biggest milk bone I can find, and I'll meet you for lunch, and Annie gets the world's largest hot fudge sundae for reading a book
and
letting
us
talk. Because I'm just trying to imagine when my daughters were your daughter's age, if they would have been, Dad, how much longer? Come on. So, Congressman Banks, thank you so very much. Safe driving getting back home. Hope you guys had a fabulous Holy Week and Easter, and look forward to hearing from you later in the week.
Same to you, Pat. Thank you. Have a good day.
Podcasts by Federated Media. Podcasts by Federated Media.